All right, a Gadol story for today. Two strangers sat side by side on a British Airways flight to New York, barely speaking. Around them, the cacophony that usually explodes on international flights filled the air. Wails of children, rounds of laughter, excited chatter. There's something about a long flight that inspires camaraderie. But the man sitting in seats 12A and 12B were stonily silent, in contrast to everyone else around them. No one would have given a single thought to the possibility that anything out of the ordinary was about to occur between these two men as they first settled into their seats. Joshua Stein, a yarmulke-wearing Orthodox Jew from London, warmly extended his hand in amiable greeting to his seatmate, a non-observant American Jew. The American grumpily took his hand, shook it limply and without enthusiasm, nodded perfunctorily, and barked out his name. Mark Kimpfheimer. Names have been changed for privacy. Joshua tried valiantly to engage the other man in pleasant conversation, but the man was unreceptive. He seemed to have an attitude. Joshua shrugged his shoulders and pulled out a Bible to study. Around him, the aisles were buzzing with heated political debates, topical gossip, and idle conversation. It would be a lonely 6-hour flight. Joshua was a perceptive person and a sensitive man to boot. He had never met Mark before and wondered why he was so curt. It troubled him that, at such a precarious time in contemporary history, human beings should be unfriendly to one another. Finally, he couldn't take it anymore. He turned to Mark and asked abruptly, "Tell me, why are you so hostile to me? Have we ever met before?" Mark dropped his semi-polite facade and became outright surly. "Sorry," he said, "but I just can't stand religion and religious Jews. Just leave me alone, okay?" Joshua Stein was taken aback by Mark Kimpfheimer's rude remark, but tried to transcend it. He realized that something must have deeply hurt this man, and there was a deep underlying reason for his rage. Instead of withdrawing from the man as others in this situation would have done, Joshua put his hand gently on Mark's shoulder and said, "Please, tell me what happened." Startled by Joshua's unexpected reaction and compassionate manner, Mark began unburdening himself. He had been a young married man in Europe right before the outbreak of World War II. He had loved his wife, Babshi, dearly, and they had a child named Itzikal. Mark was deeply devoted to his family, and they were his world. The Nazis overran his small town in Poland. All the Jews were rounded up and marched to the outskirts of town. The men were separated from their wives, and children were forced to dig enormous pits all day long. When they finished their work, the Nazis assembled the women and children near the pit and started shooting. Mark watched in horror as the shots rang out, felling his wife and Itzikal. He watched them topple into the pit. "This is how God pays back religious Jews?" he shouted at Joshua. "This is a good God, a benevolent God, a God who loves his people?" "Bah, there is no God. If my wife and son, the purest souls on earth, could die like that, I want to know such a God." Mark had never remarried or built another family. It was more than 40 years, but in his mind, he had never left the Holocaust. He was instead frozen in time. Joshua was deeply moved by Mark's story. He tried to reach out to him by alternatively comforting him and explaining why God was not dead and how to understand the Holocaust from a religious perspective. While Mark was more courteous to Josh for the rest of the trip, he was hostile to talk of religious philosophy and viewpoint. For the rest of the flight, Joshua talked to him of minor things that would not provoke his anger or exacerbate his pain. When they reached their destination, JFK Airport in New York, Joshua bid Mark farewell, certain that he would never see him again. 7 months later, Joshua Stein was in Israel to mark the High Holidays. Every year, he traveled from his home in London to Jerusalem to observe Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He felt his religious experience to be more intense if he'd spent it in this sacred city drenched in holiness. On Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, Joshua's synagogue in the Katamon section of Jerusalem had just given congregants traditional break between services. While some worshippers rushed home to catch a brief nap that might offer them some respite from their fasting headaches, Joshua Stein decided to get a breath of fresh air instead. He was taking a brief walk near the synagogue when he noticed a bareheaded man dressed in a casual wear sitting on a park bench, smoking a cigarette, which flouted the laws of Yom Kippur. As Joshua approached, the man brazenly raised his cigarette higher in the air, taunting him with this clear defiance of Jewish law. Obviously, this man had not been inside a synagogue that day. Joshua was troubled by the man's lack of reverence and respect. and I possibly decided it was incumbent upon him to give him a little lecture, a little muster. As he reached the park bench, however, he was startled to realize that the man was none other than Mark, his seatmate from the British Airways flight. After they exchanged startled greetings, Joshua tried to coax Mark into joining him at the synagogue. "Do you lack a brain?" the cantankerous old man shouted. "I told you on the plane how I feel about God." But Joshua was inspired. "Well, okay, don't come for God. But do you know what? We're having a break right now, and right after the break, the congregation will be saying Yisker, a memorial service for the dead. Have you ever honored your beloved wife and son by chanting these prayers in their memory? You don't have to stay for the rest of the services, but shouldn't you at least say a prayer for them?" Mark displayed a twinge of guilt. He had not considered that he might be dishonoring his wife and child's memory by not intoning the memorial prayers. "I'll come in just for the memorial prayers," he told Josh, "but that's it. The minute Yisker is over, I'm out of here." "Fine, just come with me now." Joshua was jubilant that Mark was accompanying him to the synagogue. By his own admission, Mark had not been inside a synagogue for over 40 years. As he escorted Mark inside the synagogue, Joshua felt overcome by what had occurred and by his own personal sense of responsibility. He wanted the synagogue experience to be a positive one for his new acquaintance, and despite his protestations, the beginning, not the end, of a reconnection with his Jewish roots. He was determined to make the experience a meaningful and memorable one for Mark. First, he took Mark around to many of the congregants and introduced him. They all welcomed him warmly into their fold. Then Joshua approached the Baal Tefila, the man who was leading the prayer service that day, and asked him if he would make an announcement in the shul welcoming Mark. He quickly explained the situation and stressed how much he wanted Mark to feel comfortable. Then Joshua made an unusual request of the prayer leader. He asked him publicly to intone a special Kel Rachamim, one of the prayers of the Yisker service, for Mark's lost family. The prayer leader agreed and the Yisker was commenced. When the prayer leader reached the special Kel Rachamim, memorial prayer, he realized he did not know the name of Mark's family members, which must be inserted into the prayers. He tiptoed over to Mark and asked for the names he needed to recite. When Mark answered that his son's name was Itzikol Ben Lengt Babshi and his wife was Babshi Bas Frumasara, the prayer leader blanched momentarily. Then he strode to the pulpit and intoned the prayer. Despite his best attempts to maintain a cool, detached distance, the tears fell copiously from Mark's eyes as he chanted memorial prayers. All the grief, misery, mourning, and loss that had been bottled up inside him spilled onto the pages of worn prayer book held in his hand. His shoulders heaved in wrenching sobs as he vocalized the names of his wife, Babshi, and his son, Itzikol. How he had loved them. How he missed them. The pain almost 40 years later was still too much to bear. His anger at God began to bubble up to the surface once again. When the Yisker service was over, he tried to slip unobtrusively out of the door. But the Baal Tefila stopped Mark as he was about to leave. "I need to ask you something," he said. "Mr. Stein told me your first name, and during Yisker you told me your wife and child's first names too. But nobody told me your last name. Can you tell me that, please? What is it?" "My last name?" Mark rolled his eyes, wondering why the man was asking with such urgency. "Kimpheimer," he answered shortly. "Chag Sameach." Although Mark wanted to leave, he couldn't. The prayer leader had just turned a terrifying chalk white and fainted on the floor. "What's the matter with him?" Mark asked the man who rushed to help him. "Is he a bad faster?" When the prayer leader returned to consciousness, it was his turn to give Mark the shock of his life. "Allow me to introduce myself," he whispered softly. "I'm Itzikol Ben Babshi, your son." "No, it's not true. You're lying. You're playing a terrible prank on me," Mark screamed. "How can you do this to me, an old man barely alive? I know what a shock this must be for you, as it is for me," Itzikol said compassionately to Mark, placing a gentle hand on his shoulder. "All these years, I thought you were dead." But Mark stammered, suddenly noticing how much this man also, no longer young, resembled his wife. "I saw with my own two eyes you and your mother fall into the fit after the bullets rang out. I saw you both crumple, dead." "That is true," said the prayer leader gently. "We both fell into the pit, but my mother fell on top of me and shielded me from the bullet. She died. I live." Crazy postscript. I read this story. I opened it up while I was on a plane, while two people sitting next to each other were arguing. And I said, wow, worthwhile to start a conversation with the person I'm sitting next to. Have a great day. From Yehuda Halberstam's Small Miracles.